This is Nightlife on ABC Radio. Andrea Ho with you. How good is your personal rear vision mirror? Sometimes I think that things in life can only dawn on us in those moments of reflection. You know, we need the time and space to look back, to help us form a deeper perspective of the past, of events, people and experiences. But here's something for you. When you get that new and deeper understanding, when you do that, what do you do with it? Well, I think about things, maybe I turn them into stories on the radio. And it turns out that authors write books. Erina Redden is a Walkley Award-winning journalist, and she's the author of a number of fiction books, most recently Deep in the Forest, which I have here in front of me. And it was only after Erina wrote that book that she realised that she'd grown up in what you might call a cult. Now she's keen to talk about the misconceptions of closed communities and the writing process that also led her to this revelation. So how about we meet her? Erina, welcome to Nightlife.
So great to be with you, Andrea.
Tell us about Deep in the Forest, firstly. It's a novel, and I've just read it. It's a lovely novel. What would you like to tell the listeners about it without giving away the plot twists?
Well, because it's a thriller, there's a lot of plot twists. So it starts off with a beautiful character, Charlie, who's a young woman in her mid-20s. She's living in this mansion that's been handed down to her through generations of her kind of lineage. But she only lives in two rooms, the kitchen and her studio, because she's a bookbinder. She has been blamed for starting a bushfire, which was devastating. Nobody loves her in her town, Stone Lake, which is high in the mountains in Victoria. And she has to get out of there. And she has got a one-way ticket out to Venice. But before she can get on the plane, she gets this cryptic message from somebody who lives behind the closed walls and the very high walls of a closed community called the Sanctuary. And she doesn't know anybody there because it's closed. But this one person has reached out to her and with this message saying, "You've got to come and help me. I need something." And that's where we're off to the races. When she's trying to locate who this person is, she finds something terrible deep in the forest, and she knows that if she reports it, she won't be able to get on the plane and get out of there. And then it becomes a real page-turning kind of thriller where we try and find out with her, because we're not in the inside of the cult, we're on the outside. So like Charlie, we're getting tiny little glimpses through the fence so we can build up this jigsaw puzzle to find out what's really going on. And as a writer, I knew that it couldn't be what we normally expect a cult to be. It had to be something different to blow our expectations and bring in something kind of new and new thinking about how these communities work.
So we don't want to give too much more of the plot away. We'll leave, because it is a thriller and there are plenty of twists and turns, and it's very much a rollicking read. I read this in a weekend and I really, really enjoyed it, which is fun. But so you've described Charlie as a flawed hero. We tend to think about thrillers as having a hero and a villain and adventures along the way, and we learn more about each. In this case, as you say, the villain is not a single person. It is a cult. But you don't start off with big blaring letters that say cult, cult, cult. Really, it is more like a closed community, and closed communities are really anything that that we are outside, that we don't understand very well. So somebody might be outside a major church or a major faith, and because we're not inside it, it looks like a closed community to us. Tell us what you are thinking now about closed communities after having written Deep in the Forest.
Well, the one thing is when I began, Andrea, I really thought only very vulnerable people would end up in a cult, you know, susceptible. They've had trauma. And now I realise actually, you know, with all the research I've done, very educated people end up, and I don't presume that educated people don't have trauma and are not vulnerable, but, you know, lots of doctors and lawyers end up in cults as well. And one of the things I think which really tells the story is one of the characters, Charlie, has one connection with inside the cult, with inside the Sanctuary, which she doesn't think of as a cult. None of the Stone Lakers think of it as a cult because they're highly dependent on the Sanctuary.
Yes.
Because it makes these beautiful artisanal furniture and organic produce. It brings a lot of tourists to this area in a way that all the other towns around it are dying. And this rural town is really thriving. And it also runs a very successful program for youth for wayward youth living rough on the streets who are into drugs, and they get them clean. And most people who are, and once they're cleaned up, they're allowed to leave. But most people choose to stay within the sanctuary. So it's kind of seen as a very beautiful, nourishing place. And this character that she's connected to, Zach, he basically speaks on behalf of the sanctuary. He wasn't born into the sanctuary. He's from the US. He's from the south of the US. And he was a Marine. So he saw, and his backstory is that he'd done a few couple of tours in Afghanistan. It's highly kind of traumatized as well. And he said, I can't live in the outside world. I tried it. But we have to, you know, it's too raw. My skin is stripped, flayed being out here. That's why I have to live in there, where we have rules, where we get up and we spend the day, we meditate and we work, we do good work together, and then we go to bed satisfied. So he actually tells this really quite nourishing story of what it's like to be in a sanctuary in which you feel protected and safe, and the rules make you safe. However, the key point about what you give up in adhering to somebody else's rules is you give up your freedom. And the real question is, how much freedom are you willing to give up for a sense of safety? So it's this whole spectrum of where we can find ourselves because we didn't ask enough questions in the beginning, or we didn't see the red flags.
There are a lot of shades of grey, though, in the book, aren't there? And Charlie, being the flawed hero that she is, as you say, she's got her issues. And so perhaps for a while the cult threw a character like Zach, who she comes to really admire and feel for someone who is dealing with her kinds of issues. As you say, she's lost her mother, so she's dealing with grief. She's feeling like the town's hating on her. She deals with anxiety, and she's got limitations on her life because of those things. These are issues that any one of us, you, me, any one of us might come across at any point in our lives. So you had a look at cults, and you explore the idea of freedom versus control. Is control sometimes good? Is freedom sometimes good? I'm quite interested in the idea that you, when you had done this exploration through this novel, that you yourself made a very big statement, which was you felt like you might have grown up in a cult. What did you mean by that?
Okay, so first of all, I just want to say about Zach, yeah, Charlie really not just admires him, she fancies him.
Oh, yeah.
Like they have this very intense relationship. Yeah, so then what I realized when I finished this book, and it was like a light bolt out of the sky, was that I had grown up in a very, very strict Catholic rural family, very poor, like we had very little. So we didn't have access to a lot of resources. We only knew other Catholics. We did Catholic things. I went to a Catholic school. My whole world was based on what I would say there were three things when you're looking at a cult that are kind of the biggest red flags. One is that you have a single or shared power that is absolutely, you know, you cannot question it. Of course, parish priest was like that. And I grew up in a particular part of Melbourne, which later through the Royal Commission has been identified as one of the hotspots of pedophilia. So we would literally, you would feel so much reverence for the priest. He was a god in our community. And that godly power was passed on to the father in the family, and the sense of patriarchy in the family. So the women would serve. You know, my mum would always say, get your father a cup of tea. I was like, you can get his own cup of tea. No. And the thing is that the language that you use, we had specific language that we and beliefs that we organised ourselves around. And one thing that I remembered post-writing Deep in the Forest was I also, because we're so Catholic, I'm no longer Catholic myself, but brought my children up to be cultural Catholics so that we were part of the extended tribe. They did the sacraments. So little one was doing the reconciliation sacrament, and we were required to do to read the Old Testament, which I'd gone through school reading the New Testament, which is all about love and mercy. The Old Testament is quite, there's some pretty tough things that God requires of people.
It's fire and brimstone, yes.
My little one's quite a character. And she had said that she wanted to be, when she grew up, an evil overlord. And which, at reading the Bible story one night, she said, oh, Mama, this story's so good. God's great. He's such a good model for being an evil overlord. And so I just thought, yeah, I did grow up in that kind of very closed community. But I don't think the conditions that I grew up in exist anymore because we have the internet. In Catholicism, and of course, there's a lot more lay authority within the Catholic Church, in the modern Catholic Church. So I wouldn't say that, I'm not trying to say that the Catholicism that exists now, but the one that I grew up in was a very tight, closed society. And it actually meant community. It actually meant that when I was growing up, I became one of those kind of people. And I think most of us are. You said it too, Andrea. A lot of us do feel very dark nights of the soul in our lives, and we do reach for living a deeper, richer life, having more pleasure and less pain, being part of a community, making the world a better place. And what I found in my research is that's exactly where most modern, I mean, there's still religious cults, and there's a lot of them, but there's a lot of cults that aren't religious. There's a running cult in America where people go to learn how to be marathon runners. And then they end up in this very tight community where, women are grooming the main guy on stage while he talks, brushing his long hair. You can get cults around wealth creation. You can get cults around martial arts. There's even if you look up on the internet how to recognize if your martial art dojo is a cult. Like it's very, we come to thinking, how can we create a beautiful life for ourselves? And we reach out to others, but you've got to be careful. I mean, there was this guy in Australia, particularly James Salerno, who is now in jail, but he came out of Vietnam and he was desperate to kind of create this beautiful place to live for other people as well, and he called it the ideal human environment. People in Australian journalists wrote award-winning pieces about how great and how kind of how good it was in trying to organize society in a rich community way. Like years later, we find out that there was bad stuff going on there, underage sex. So he is now in jail for that. So the thing is, Prince Harry went to visit him. He thought it was great. The Dalai Lama spent time there. Like we're talking about really things that on the outside look very good. And one of the ways we know it's a cult, I think, is when people leave. What do they say about it? If the majority of people are saying it's a dark place, we have to actually investigate that. But unfortunately, it's very hard to investigate cults because it's very hard to see what's going on. It looks like everything is fine.
You're listening to the voice of Erina Redden, and she is an author of a new book, and it's a fictional book. It's a novel called Deep in the Forest. It's a thriller, but at the heart of this thriller is the dark secret of a cult and a town that the cult is in and the people who are involved. And it is a rollicking read. It's set in country Australia, country Victoria, as it happens. So, Erina, you've just talked about growing up yourself in country Victoria, being involved in quite a tight religious environment as you were growing up. Things have changed, we know. But after all of this, you became a journalist. So I wonder how much of ourselves we bring into what we write when we write fiction. What was it like to go first and write factual things where you investigate and you present the stories and the facts as they are, to actually coming to what many journalists think of as the dark side? I mean, I remember my first journalism lecturer Sally White saying, if you think that you're here for creative writing, you're not. That's down the hall. We're here to report. They're two very
Dark
different
side,
things.
creative writing. Okay, so I loved journalism. I was a political journalist, so I wasn't like a fit. I did features and I did actually TV documentaries and things. I was a foreign correspondent. So you're mostly writing the stuff that's happening, the stuff that's, impacting people's lives, trying to gather facts. So I think that that's a really important role to play. And I actually was the correspondent for the Pacific region. And so the dependence that people have on knowing what is going on in their community and getting some analysis about it is really powerful. The ability to have people make decisions about their lives and to understand and take action is really fueled by good journalism. I think in the kind of journalism I did, I was writing to a particular, you know, like there's a certain formula in writing your stories. So it's, and you have to be as tight as possible. Like at one stage, you have to get a 90-page report down to 30 seconds. And this is about, you know, like I was writing a story about a reported coup in Vanuatu. So that's a big ask to kind of get that kind of level of synthesis. And what I think you're doing in fiction is you're falling below the facts to come up with what I think is a deeper truth. And that is about the human condition. We have these wild and beautiful minds. And when you read a book or when you're involved in the creation of a story, you actually get to touch that part of ourselves that we don't, I mean, we live these days, you know, during our days or during our living lives, we have to make money, we have to look after the kids, we have to get the food on the table. We live in a certain kind of level, and when we get into creativity or into reading or, you know, being part of the story, it creates something new in our lives. And, you know, people don't like to change, but stories create the possibility for change. And so many times people have reached out to me, say, your book changed my life. And for me, that's the connection, because even though Deep in the Forest is a thriller, I also go for, where is the love? Where is the heart? And that's the thing that holds the character, you know, Charlie, and the way she manages the things that are thrown at her, all her challenges, is through the love of her smaller community. And they all kind of come around her. And that's what I'm interested in, is how we have the, at the heart of Deep in the Forest, which is kind of like, it has a kind of fairy tale feel, or what's happening deep in the forest. But it's this question of, Do we choose to have power over or power with? And what I want to be able to share with people and have people kind of connect with is, when we have power with each other, we can do amazing things in our lives. And that is really the journey that I think you can really empower people, whether doing journalism or creative writing or telling stories. But for me, there's such a level where you fall in. It's you fall into that wild, beautiful place that's under your conscious mind, into your subconscious, and that's where you're connecting with people. And I think that's really powerful.
It is. That's an incredible thought, the idea of grappling with the power over versus the power with, something that each of us has to think about in our relationships around us and how we are treated as well as how we treat others. But looking at the craft of writing, and you are a journalist, and if I might say, it is one of the features about this book is that the prose is quite spare. You know, it does, as I say, move along at a rollicking pace. You get lots of sense of place and time. There's good descriptions in there, but there's no flabbiness either. You're not sitting here with 800 pages just going, when is this ever going to do something next? So it's not that kind of novel at all. You asked me a difficult question as we were sort of setting up and walking into the studio here to have this chat, and that was, you asked me, have I ever written any fiction? And that little part of me just went, yes, I have, but it was a very long time ago and it wasn't very good. And I wonder then if you might share with me and our Nightlife family, who I know there are people in our Nightlife family who probably have that little person inside them too, saying, where I would like to do this. How did you come at the idea of writing fiction? And the reason why I want to ask you this is because you're conscious of the act of writing and communication. So I think you might have thought about this a bit.
Oh, very much. And I just want to say also about the Nightlife community, I think the night is a very magical kind of intense place where, of course, there's going to be writers and readers amongst us all. I always knew that I wanted to write as a child. You know, like most of us, I had a pretty difficult home life. There wasn't much money, and that caused a lot of pain in our family. You know, so there was a lot of conflict. So when I was a little one, when I wrote stories, I felt so right in the world, as if everything around me was in its rightful place. I felt nourished. But because I lived in the country and I didn't know any writers and I couldn't imagine a world in which such special people existed, I didn't reach for writing as an adult. I went first into journalism, and I'm glad I did it because it taught me so much. It taught me the discipline of writing. It taught me how to write fast. It taught me how to write spare. And it taught me how to write very evocatively, no flabby words, as you say. And it taught me how to write to deadlines. And I think all of that was incredibly special, which I brought to my fiction writing. And when I had a baby, I realized I would never have time again in my life. It wasn't one day I will write. It's this is the day, because my days are gone. So I used to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning. I was living in Sydney, beautiful weather. You could do it there. And I would write before the baby woke up. And that's where I began my journey in fiction. In this particular book, Andrea, there's two kinds of writing. People, they say there's your pantsers, the ones that are just, you come to your blank page and off you go, and it's quite scary. What's going to happen? You don't know as much as the reader, right? For the first draft. Then, or there's plotters, those that actually plot out everything. I used to be a pantser, and now I'm both.
Because seat even of the if pants, plot, is that what that is? Pantser?
Yeah, yeah. Going by the seat of your pants. Very good point. People say to me, this book is very filmic because it's written in scenes. Like, you see everything in the book. That's a lot of, in writer's terms, you show, not tell. Instead of saying that somebody's sad, you show it, which is a much more evocative way that readers can really connect with. They have to experience it rather than with their body, rather than with their brain. So I always want to write to people's experience, I want to give people an experience of reading rather than an intellectual kind of page. Yes, I know what's happening. I want to use all the senses and really get into where people are, because I think it creates greater connections and it opens much more spaces for people to see themselves within the book, because that's why we actually read. We read because it's to create the possibility of change in us, to actually get into a kind of a meditative state. You know, reading at nighttime is that beautiful, you know, sliver between the day and the subconscious of the night. And so there's a lot of there's a lot of poetry that happens in that space. So you want to reach into that, but in a way that's kind of page turning so that people are really engaged in it.
You're hearing Erina Redden here. She is our writer this evening here on Nightlife on ABC Radio. And as you can hear, she understands our hour of the night, which is actually a real pleasure. It's good to have someone who feels the time and space. Erina, I'm so glad that you mentioned show versus tell in the style of writing. I was going to ask you a bit about that. So in terms then of picking your time and place, the time and place is another powerful thing. This novel is very much set today. I'm surprised because there aren't many of these around at the moment. There seems to have been a bit of a resurgence of novels set in the past before, I guess, things got so complicated. How do you deal with writing with the everyday? Is that a conscious choice that you choose to be in the here and now?
It really was, Andrea. My last book, The Serpent Skin, was written in two time zones, the 60s and the 80s, because I was really writing about the world I grew up in. But I really decided that because I wrote this novel during COVID, living through COVID, I wanted to reach for a post-COVID living. I wanted to remind myself that we would live through this together, we would get through it. As a writer, it's a responsibility to take people where they are. So there is, it's not, it's COVID, I would call it COVID light. You know, there's mentions of it.
It's not heavy.
Yeah, well, just like this, there's probably three or four mentions as if it's just happened, we're through it. Because I think I want to acknowledge that we have been through something amazing and profound and very challenging and difficult. And we did get through it. We found the light. And that's, I guess, one of the things that I try to do is in our living. I mean, like we all, there's light and shade, and I wanted to always remember that the dark brings light, and that's what the Deep in the Forest is all about. You know, it's deep in the forest where it's dark, but you do come to clearings, you do come to the light, metaphorically. There's a lot of kind of ice and fire. The fire sets the story up, but there's the inciting incident, which is the point that makes the whole story, you know, start and take off, is about ice, because it's a once in a 50-year event. Where the lake has iced over, and what Charlie finds in the lake is the thing that becomes the inciting incident. So it's that thing about, and the first line is, my mother said to me something like, ice Ice always melts, i.e., the truth will always out. So this is a story about uncovering the truth of the story, but also that, in some levels, what I'm trying to go for is the truth of our souls as we live in this modern world. If we reach out to each other, and that's what I think writers and storytellers and artists can do, is they take the time to be in that moment and then reach out to others to share it. And the best for me is when you get that beautiful combination of a light touch to difficult things, because it's like a path, it's like a torch.
And so when we look at light and shade, we hear about ice and fire, we think about dark and light given to us by torch, by humour. I think you get the sense that this is a book which is really something that draws you in and an enjoyable read. It's called Deep in the Forest, and it asks what lies behind the walls of the sanctuary. A thriller set in the modern day in Australia and written by Australian author Erina Redden. Erina, it's been such a pleasure to have you in to visit us this evening. Thank you so much.
It was so beautiful to be with you, Angie, and to be with you all.
On ABC Radio and on the ABC Listen app, this is Nightlife.